and welcome to the Unsafe Space. I'm Sarah Ryan. I'm a former Fianna Fáil councillor. Don't let me forget it. Business person, mother of two, all those good things. And my other half, Keith Redmond, is here with me.
Hello, better half, some might say. My name is Keith Redmond. I'm a former Fine Gael councillor. I'm a dentist, businessman, if you like, and father of two. Same two, actually.
Conveniently. And this is our podcast, and today, getting right into it, our topic is going to be inequality.
Or equality, whatever you having yourself.
Whatever way you like to see the world. So there's a lot of chatter about it. There's a lot of...
Buzzword, isn't it?
It's a buzzword. Yeah. It's a hot topic. And I suppose the question is it good? Mm. Is equality good? Mm. What does equality mean? And we're going to start off... Keith's going to do a little chat there about exactly what it is, because I think people... I have this theory that a lot of people don't actually understand a lot of concepts, like a lot of buzzwords that are, and they kind of like hear them and they're like, yeah. So we're going to start this off at a very kind of granular level and we're going to build it up, because I think there's a lot of people who think, like, nobody's going to say inequality, that's great. But there's a lot of politics in this, and there's a lot of different things, and the people have a lot of different views, and it's kind of like whitewashed over how we get equality. And some of how we get equality is very unequal.
Well, like, again, as Sarah said, equality is such a buzzword at the moment. You see it everywhere. You know, what do we want? We want equality and, you know, fairness, equity. You know, who comes out and says, well, I'm against equality, fairness and equity? I mean, nobody, right?
So, well, you.
But it's, but because I understand them. But the fact is that, you know, these buzzwords are very carefully used, and language is a really, really powerful weapon. And this was spotted many decades ago by social scientists who were trying to push a kind of a left-wing agenda. They were saying, well, we've got to own some words. And if we own words like fairness and we own words like equality, it's going to be harder for our opponents to tackle them, because, again, who's going to come out against those things, right? But just to break it down, what is, you know, equality or inequality? So the social scientists will tell you that inequality results from a society organized by hierarchies of class, race, and gender. Okay, so in effect, what that means is that you have certain results, certain observable results in society that show a difference between how you end up in life as a result of your class, race, gender, and you can break it down to every other social group now. I mean, we fragment into so many different things now. So The goal of those who say that they're in favor of equality is that the outcome of everybody in society should be equal, regardless of what you do with your life, regardless of where you start off in life, and all of those things. And they conflate one thing, which I think everybody agrees with, which is equality of opportunity versus equality of outcome. So we're going to discuss that a bit. So I'm in favor, and I think most people are, of equality of opportunity in as much as you can do it. And I do believe that the state can assist that in enormous ways. The most major way is by providing access to education, which allows people from the lowest income decile to rise to the highest income decile in Ireland far faster than in anywhere in Europe. We have the best social mobility in Europe. Don't let anybody tell you different. We do. So from my own point of view, I have a fantastic, impeccable, you know, card to pull out here. So I grew up in a working class housing estate in Finglas, grew up, you know, in what you would consider the lowest economic decile. And as a result of the education that I was able to avail of in primary school, secondary school, and then in college, trenders are winners. quick aside, how do you know somebody's gone to Trinity? Don't worry, they'll tell you. But as a result of that access, then that equality of opportunity was afforded to me. But it doesn't mean that I then had an absolute right to an equality of outcome versus somebody who did other things, didn't do things, did things. So the person who didn't take the opportunities, the person who didn't avail of those opportunities, that they would then have a grievance and say, yeah, well, I want equality of outcome with you. I want to end up exactly with the same income, the same lifestyle, the same everything that you have, you know, because that's equality and that's fairness. No. So equality of opportunity and equality of outcome are totally different. When a state strives for equality of opportunity, it sees individuals aspiring, pushing, incentivizing themselves to move up the social ladder. when you have a quality of outcome mandated by the state, where you deliberately remove things from people, remove incentives, hyper-tax them, prevent them from getting too far ahead, what happens then is people just sit still. They sit where they are. They don't strive, because why would they? The reward for their work will be removed from them. So why would they be incentivized to do anything? And so you see where equality of outcome has been mandated across, say, the socialist or communist world.
So give an example of equality of outcome.
Equality of outcome is a situation like across the Soviet republics, the Soviet Union and Cuba, North Korea, you know, all the socialist and communist states that I've ever been. Their cornerstone is equality of outcome. So they believe in equality of outcome. It doesn't matter what you do.
No, but give an example of it in practice.
Okay, so in Cuba, you can be a brain surgeon or a bin man, and you're going to end up with the same income. Okay, so as a result, they've got a hell of a lot of bin men and very few brain surgeons. So you will always choose to do the least amount to gain the maximum in life. That's a human thing.
Yeah, so, but that's financial. I think like it's like... Like you're saying about, you know, that you worked really hard, you went to, you availed of secondary school education, you did your Leaving Cert, you went to Trinity College, you became a dentist, right? That's great. I came from a different background from you, but I did no work for my Leaving Cert.
A privileged queen like that. Go yeah. on, tell
yeah,
them.
Yeah, sure.
Aylesbury Park.
No, oh,
Dublin 4. Privilege. Dublin
shut
4.
Shut up, hater. Anyway.
I still have a chip.
Yeah, huge. But I did not do any work for my Leaving Cert, you know, within reason. I was extremely bold. And equality of outcome would be that you worked really hard and I didn't do any work, but we both get the same. We both get into dentistry. And that's not fair. So it's like that, you know, you set up the system to be as fair as possible from an opportunity point of view, yeah. but you don't skewer the results in favor of what you want, which is basically why, like, I don't agree with gender quotas, because that's skewering the results. It's not choosing me for a job based on the fact that I have more ability. Like, I'll take my chances against any man, to be honest. I'll take my chances. I'll win some, I'll lose some. That's equality. I won't go into an interview for a job or a position on a board and say, well, I know I'm probably getting this because I'm the only woman here.
Well, if we move from best person for the job to the best woman for the woman job and the best man for the man job. And
yeah, but the problem is that the man jobs are getting less and less and less.
But we're attempting to use sexism to defeat sexism. And like yeah. the whole gender quota thing is, I think it undermines
so
women of accomplishments.
So
because
I.
you're just there because you're a woman. That yeah. like completely undermines
it. Exactly. And any woman like who's worked in the corporate world are... Just a basic jealousy and human behavior means that once you get into that job, the two people who didn't get that job are going to undermine you and are going to be saying and thinking, well, she's only here because she's a woman. I don't need that. Like, the world is hard enough. I'd rather win some and lose some, and know that when I walk in there that I got that because when I went into an interview against two other women and two other men, I was the best person. Not, oh, I went into an interview and there was four guys and me, so I was like, I can do whatever. I'm getting this.
And also you'll see gender quotas on political tickets. And I mean, I speak obviously to, I mean, being a former councillor, and I know a lot of politicians, and they're all just, you know, going along with this because of the optics. But
yeah.
And they're stuffing, you know, tickets for elections with women, no hopers, that they know will have absolutely no chance. And it's so cruel because they're telling these potential candidates
one thing. Well, they've been doing that with men for years, in fairness. They've been, you know, putting plumpers on, or whatever the word is, onto tickets since time immemorial.
But they're playing lip service to this gender quota stuff.
Yeah, I totally agree that it's like, and it's again, it's just like, here's something to do. Let's be seen to be doing something. You know, like, sure, look, we've loads of girls. Yeah. Aren't they lovely?
Look at all the girls.
They all got 50 votes.
Yeah.
Or 266 or whatever. Mm. And aren't they great? Like, that's all nonsense. I don't believe that anything, like, really changes that way. And I also think, controversially, and you know, come at me if you want, that some jobs women like more and some jobs men like more.
Yeah, of course.
Like,
they do.
And in other countries where they've imposed, is it Sweden or
yeah,
wherever,
yeah.
where they've imposed gender quotas onto everything, and they've put all these rules and put all these things and made it be this, that, and the other, After years and years of being in practice, at the end of the day, more women want to be nurses than men. More women want to be teachers than men. More men like science than women. Doesn't mean women can't be scientists. Doesn't mean men can't be nurses. It's just that we tend to like things more than others.
Now, you see, the grievance studies guys will tell you that this is a social construct.
Oh,
okay? And then what's happening is that women like to be nurses because they see women in previous generations being nurses. But there is, and it's undoubtedly true, there is definitely a caring aspect that is hardwired into the female psyche that is not there in as much abundance in men. There is definitely a, I don't know what you'd call it, like a mathematical side to a majority of men that is definitely found in women too, but is found in greater abundance that gears those guys toward engineering or whatever. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, we seem to be mad about diversity, except when it comes to realizing that diversity exists within, you know, genders too.
Yeah.
There are certain aspects of men and women that are just different.
Men tend to say that these days, but
it's true.
Men tend to be taller than women. There's exceptions, but men tend to be taller than women. So if physicality, like different physicality, we take as a given, why can't...
And also, I'm very intrigued when we talk about gender quotas in politics, that a lot of it, the narrative around it is, you know, well, if women were in charge, you know, we wouldn't have wars. If women were in charge, we wouldn't have right-wing politics. If women were in charge, we wouldn't have the crash. You know,
if women were involved, we wouldn't have wars. Sounds to me like somebody who was homeschooled or something because they didn't go through the absolute thorough warfare that is a girls only secondary school. Because like, frankly, I've got some PTSD and some war wounds, a few bullet wounds and a couple of knife wounds in my back from 6 years in secondary school. So anybody who's saying that women wouldn't create wars, it's just nonsense. And it's just like, embarrassing.
But have you noticed that people who are in favour of gender quotas are typically not the people who will laud, for example, women who have actually reached the top.
Oh, yeah.
So they're not crazy about Thatcher. They're not crazy about Theresa May because she's the wrong kind of woman.
Yeah,
you know?
Same principle as they're not mad on women who want to stay at home because they don't fit in with the narrative.
Yeah, but also they're not, like, for example, if you were to say, okay, we don't need gender quotas. What we need now are race quotas and we need sexuality quotas, okay? Mm-hmm. So we need a certain number of TDs who should be gay. We need a certain number of TDs who should be brown or black. We need a certain number of, you know, blah, blah, blah. We now have a brown gay Taoiseach, and yet nobody's talking about how wonderful all this is because he's the wrong politics. You know, he's on the right, allegedly. And so, you know, he's the wrong kind of guy. And also, he got to the top. He didn't need a quota. So this kind of brown gay guy is now the Taoiseach. He didn't need a quota to get there. All the women who reached the top, Mary Harney, the first female Taoiseach, you know, Joan Burton.
Mary Hannafin, Mary Cochran.
Yeah, Mary. All these guys who were there before the gender quota thing,
You're not mentioning the Fianna Fáil ones.
I was going to mention them because allegedly women, if they'd been around the cabinet table, would have, you know, talked everybody out of the crash and the crash wouldn't have happened. You forget there were three Marys around the cabinet table, okay? And they were there and they didn't save us all. So we come back to this notion that I believe in individuals. I believe in individuals regardless. I far prefer to think about what's between their ears than what's between their legs. I don't really care about their genitalia. I care about what they're thinking. And you want diversity of opinion is far more important than diversity of physicality, gender, whatever. I mean, I just think that when we talk about equality, we need to think about the equality of affording everybody an equal shake, equality of opportunity. So regardless of if it's a man or a woman, you have to be, and the grievance studies guys hate this, but you have to be gender blind. You have to be color blind. They're good things to be. They hate that now. They think you have to be omni-aware of all of the different things in the room, and we have to have three of those, two of those, two of those. That's not equality. What that is mandating inequality. Actually, you're treating people unequally.
But isn't it like kind of funny in that I now consider myself, in the true meaning of the word, to be an actual liberal, in the sense that, like, I don't care what anybody else is or is doing. I think that if five people show up that for the same job, and I know that people are going to say, oh, well, not everybody had the same journey and like you were afforded more privilege and blah, 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 blah. But that's not a reason to to, you know, like if you come from a privileged background and you do your Leaving Cert and you work and you study and you really, really work hard or whatever, like, do you have certain advantages? Maybe it's easier for you to study. Maybe this, that and the other, and you went to a better school that had better teachers. Fine. But you don't deserve to just be dismissed when it comes to college places just because everything was easier for you than it was for the guy who got the same amount of points as you but had it harder. That's not equal. That's not fair. That's just mandating a political view on top of people and accepting that some people who've had a little bit more advantage are going to be disadvantaged in your new world order. And that's not the kind of society that I think does anything but breeds resentment. It makes people feel disenfranchised from society and is the exact reason why things and people and groups rise up, because certain groups of society start to feel like they're out.
But also, it used to be a thing where you know, when you spoke about your children, you would always say, I want them to get ahead in life. And I used this phrase, actually, when I was talking to a guy one time. He's a pal of mine, actually, but he's a terrible left-winger, because I do have left-wing pals. But
actually, most of your friends are all left.
I know, I like an argument.
You like fighting.
That's what it is. But I said to him, you know, well, we all want our kids to get ahead in life. And he said, well, I don't. And I was just like, what? And he said, I don't want my kids getting ahead, because they get ahead, they're getting ahead of someone else. I don't want them getting ahead of someone else. I was like, but well, you want them to stay where they are. And he said, what I want is an organized society that doesn't have that as its goal. I'm like, but if you have no goal to get ahead in life, you just sit still and do nothing. And you wait for the state to hand you things. And he's like, well, not hand you things, but everybody should have an equal shake. And I said, well, an equal shake now is different. An equal shake means we all end up with the same amount of salt. And an equal, in your world, an equal shake to me is that
we all get handed the salt.
We all get handed the salt. Exactly. And you put your own salt on your own meal. You know, and that's what freedom really is all about. Because at the heart of somebody who tells you that they're in favor of equality and fairness and equity and all the nice buzzwords is that what they're effectively saying to you is, if you get too far ahead, we will drag you back. And I'm always intrigued at the fact that people who are in favor of these things always look to the guy and girl who are getting ahead in life and want to drag them back, instead of looking at the people who should be pushed forward.
Yeah.
So,
and they'll always use examples that are ridiculous. Like, you know, like they'll say, oh, well, you know, if you're earning 300 billion euro a year, you know, I think that you should be paying tax. Of course, 300 billion. Like, you know, of course, somebody who's earning 300 billion. Like, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, those 12 guys.
But really what it's about is that very subtly, jealousy has become an economic position.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I mean, Ireland is famous. I mean, we have a national sport of begrudgery. You know, I'm not a man who likes a Bono story, but, you know, the famous story that Bono told about America and why he liked America when he first went was that Americans, when they see a kind of a successful guy with a big house on the top of a hill, say, one day I'm going to be that guy. He said, in Ireland, if you see a successful guy with a big house on the top of a hill, you say, one day we're going to get that guy. Yeah. And so, you know, Ireland has this begrudgery that's hardwired in. It's a post-colonial thing, I'm absolutely sure. You know, we always looked at like the Anglos, and we always thought like those guys were given all our land and given all, and we have a grievance against. I'm sure it feeds through into our current thinking.
Yeah.
But our politics, our tax system, our everything is built around this sense of grievance and envy. You know, and
if you're successful, you should be punished.
Yeah, and you obviously did something wrong, or you got there, you know, by default.
You did something.
You paid off somebody, you knew somebody. You know, this is all built into, hardwired into the Irish psyche. So instead of being the kind of society where we laud success and we welcome success and we want success for our family and our kids, we become the kind of society that, you know, looks down our nose at success and thinks success is getting above your station. And, you know, and it is, and that feeds right through to our politics. And now we have a situation where we, as I always say, we have the highest taxes in Europe on medium incomes. You know, I mean, you cross over 50%, where the state takes more than you get from your day's work.
You know, you work for free until Wednesday lunchtime.
At the lowest level anywhere in Europe. And once you hit, like, you know, 35 grand, you're nearly 50%.
So to take it back, though, on inequality, right? There are children who are born into extremely disadvantaged situations.
Hello, I'm here. I love that card. I love pulling out that card.
Okay, but you're here, and you know, like, let's not,
yeah, yeah,
let's
okay,
not
okay,
like okay. Angela's ashes things too much.
Okay,
here now,
okay,
Keith. Okay?
Okay,
you had very supportive parents. You had a mother who, like, yeah, was yeah, very supportive. Like, you know, okay.
That's what all comes down to, your parents.
So, and it, yeah, fine. So. Don't you know, don't exaggerate. But there are children who don't have that, who grow up in absolute disadvantage or whatever. So, and there are people who, you know, do start off at a more disadvantaged situation than other people. And how do we, like, you know, I think that those people should be helped, should be assisted, should be given, you know, support to get them to a level playing field. And how do you do that without crossing the line into, you know?
I think the trick is to always be thinking equality of opportunity, always be thinking, how do you help those guys get the opportunity that is kind of innate from coming from a kind of a well-to-do background with supportive parents? How do we get to those guys to get it? You're never going to get an equality of that opportunity.
So free education,
how do we narrow the gap? And so you have free education, you have access to university and college. Personally, I'm in favor of loans in college rather than free education, because as we've discovered, if you get a third level education, the state then feels they own you. We had this thing where the doctors and nurses who are now emigrating.
But you probably wouldn't have been able to do what you did if you had to get a loan.
Yeah, no, I would. Of course I would, because a loan is only repayable. There's lots of student loan systems that work really well in Australia, New Zealand and stuff. So, like, you have a system where...
I think that the free education thing is a great idea.
Let me just finish that point, okay? What happens with the free education thing is...
And it's not free, by the way.
Yeah, it's not free. But, okay, the highly subsidized, whatever you want to call it. The problem with that is that there are those in society who then feel that they own you because you have a moral debt. To the state. So the president, President Higgins, even recently came out and said that the doctors and nurses who go abroad afterwards and work, they should be made to work in the Irish health system because we gave them their education.
Yeah.
So lefties really have a thing where they really feel, you know, oh, we gave you this, so now we own you. And that's, I mean, every left-wing country has always had walls around it to prevent people leaving.
You're just giving them too much power. I mean, President Higgins can say whatever he likes about whatever he likes. But at the end of the day, like, well, I didn't do medicine. But, like, if I'd done medicine, my sister did medicine. If, you know, my sister wants to go off. And by the way, postgrad medicine is not free. My sister did psychology and then she did medicine. And she has to get a loan and she has to pay that off. So,
yeah, yeah.
And as a doctor, if my sister wants to go to Timbuktu, it's really none of his business. And until they make the health service something that's not cripplingly depressing to work in, they should all leave.
Yeah, but the point I'm trying to make is that, you know, they always, people on the left who believe that, you know, you got your free, in inverted commas, free education, so therefore we own you. That is a really common narrative. That's not just President Higgins. That is a common narrative. If you think about left-wing countries around the world, they always put walls around them to prevent the people leaving.
Yeah, I know, but there's loads of common narratives that you ignore.
What they nationalize is human beings.
Just ignore it.
They claim ownership. You can't really ignore it if they pass laws telling you you have to stay. So,
but they're not going to pass.
I think you could easily see that. You could easily see a law in this country where if you decide to leave, that it's mandated that you have to repay the state the money, blah, blah, blah. That could easily happen.
I don't see it.
Oh, that could easily happen. I mean, you know, it's so easy. I mean, you pick a privileged group like doctors. Politicians say, these doctors are leaving us and we don't have doctors. And so what we need to do is we need to pass a law so that if you want to emigrate, you've got to repay us all the money we pay.
And then the following,
that's so easily
and the
done.
Following year, people will go abroad to do their degree.
Yeah. Anyway, look, the point we're kind of getting a little off the topic, yeah. But equality and inequality, you know, if you ever hear somebody coming up with the buzzwords equality, always immediately think, are you talking about equality of opportunity or are you talking about equality of outcome? And they will quickly tell you it's equality of outcome and what's wrong with that. And now you have a few little kernels to hit them with. So a state that mandates equality of outcome always has to use draconian powers over the individual. They will use confiscatory powers over the individual to remove any rewards they get from their endeavors. They will use a situation like they will prevent them leaving the country or create debt walls. It doesn't have to be a Berlin physical wall. It can be a debt wall that prevents you leaving. So they will always use draconian powers to mandate equality of outcome. But equality of opportunity is equally within the state's gift to strive towards. And that is a very laudable thing to do. And again, I come back to the fact that Ireland has the best social mobility in Europe. You have the best chance of going from the lowest income decile to the highest income decile in Ireland than in any other country in Europe.
And
so
is
we
it
have
not
a fantastic quality of opportunity ladder.
And is it not the case that if you start to, you know, focus on measures that provide equality of opportunity for everybody, that things will happen, but they're slow and people have to be patient. But at the moment, there seems to be this kind of idea of just like ramming your agenda into the middle of, you know, society and saying we want to change absolutely everything right now. We want to see results right now. And that doesn't really work.
You see, again, we come back to a thing we often speak about in this podcast when we talk about politics and social issues. This is the yes minister thing where, you know, minister, this is an issue. Something must be done. This is something, so it must be done.
Actually, I think
regardless of whether it works or not.
No, I think that this isn't that. I think this is way worse than that. I think this is... not just like it might, on the political end, it might be paying lip service, and that's fine. But I think that the people who drive for these kind of things have an agenda. It's very thought out, and it's very at whatever cost, and it's very like, you know, let's create a society where it's predominantly this gender and predominantly this and predominantly that, and tough if you're anything else. And that's wrong. And that means we've learned no lessons from, you know, unfair societies in the past. Like, I don't think that the answer to getting equality for women is to make men unequal.
But also the notion, like there's a kind of an established notion of what it means for, let's talk about, for example, gender equality. What does it mean for a woman to be equal to a man in the eyes of people who are striving for this? Well, it means that there'll be equal numbers of women who are doing whatever, engineers. There'll be an equal number of women around the cabin table. There'll be an equal number of women who are wealthy. There'll be an equal... But that completely removes the concept that individuals may not want that. Individuals, for example, a woman will accept the sacrifice of not gaining two rungs on the career ladder for the fact that she has spent 5 or 10 years, you know, rearing her children and really enjoyed it and gained
like
from that and liked
it.
Yeah, you like that. Is that right? So, but in general, that's not seen as a valuable thing by those who, you know, see gender equality. So they're not really after equality for individuals to make individual choices. That no, they are mandating the outcome and we all have to meld around that. So I think from my point of view, I'm such an individualist and I just believe that, you know, I far prefer to think about people as sentient creatures rather than the physical forms they find themselves in. And I just think that, like, as from an individualist point of view, we should be trying to respect the individual choices and opportunities for individuals and saying, well, what does that individual want? Here are 5 different ways you can go in your life. You choose your own path. Instead of saying, no, you can't choose your own path because we've mandated that you're going to be X or you're going to be Y because we just need those numbers.
And you're not getting this. And when you flip around the gender quota thing, it's great to say, oh, it sounds good. Like when you say, oh, more women in politics, whatever. And like, we can all get on board with that. But it doesn't sound that great to say, well, we should have gender quotas in teachers and nurses, because that'll mean a lot of women will lose their jobs. Do you know what I mean? Like 50% nurses and 50% teachers being men would mean a lot of job losses for women.
50% women who are bin men and coal miners. I mean, I don't really see the main advantage in that either.
Well, let's not exaggerate. But like, the point is that it doesn't really work in practice sometimes, and you have to like think about things. And the only thing that really works long term is to allow individuals to all have an equal start, and at a base level that's great, and the state should provide the same start as much as possible to children, be it through welfare, be it through, you know, whatever they can. But as it gets to a certain point, like the leaving cert, the CA, the point system, you know, it's terribly brutally unfair in some ways, but it's the fairest system you can imagine.
Because it's brutal.
Because it's work hard and you get X, don't work and you get Y. And it doesn't matter who you are or where you come from. So you can be, you know, the king of the south side, you can be private school educated, whatever. But if you sat around doing sweet FA for the last 2 years of your leaving cert and you get 100 points, you're not going anywhere. And it doesn't matter what your daddy does or what phone calls or how many friends he has, X, Y, and Z, you won't be going to college because you won't get in. And that's fair.
Now, I would, as devil's advocate, I know there's somebody probably screaming at this podcast right now saying, well, yeah, but if you look at really fancy private schools, 90% of those guys go to college. If you look at somebody in a working class area, or school in a working class area, 80% of those don't go to college. But I don't think
that's not as simple as it sounds.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, and first of all, private school education is like the numbers don't add up that they're better educated than public schools. It very much depends on the school. But that's a cultural thing. Like, we've had this conversation before where, like, my dad was really, really, really pro college, and I didn't even know, you know, all, like, genuinely didn't really even know there was an option but to go to college. That's not because, like, that's not anything to do with anything except the culture of the way I was brought up. So some of those schools are, you know, are a lot of schools in certain areas, the parents went to college, and so there's just an expectation that the kids will go to college because that's the way they... It's nothing to do with, you know, anything else. So I don't think that, like, the Leaving Cert, you know, like... There's not equality in the you know, in who goes to college yet. But the Leaving Cert is the fairest system to get as many people as possible to go to college.
Because I suppose the Leaving Cert and people going to college, and by the way, going to college isn't the be all and end all.
Yeah, I mean, and some guys, of the best off people, so, I know just did trades.
Yeah, absolutely. Some of the guys I grew up with are carpenters and plumbers, and they've, you know, very nice lifestyles. So the whole concept of doing your Leaving Cert and, let's say, just going to college, it's a really blunt measurement. Yeah. It's a really blunt measurement. And there was a cultural aspect where if a lot of middle class people went to college, they want their kids to go to college, as you discussed. A lot of working class people, maybe who didn't go to college, don't necessarily value it in the same way. They don't necessarily see it as the same thing. So it's not like, you know, oh, well, this is a sign that we have an unequal society. It's a sign that we have unequal ambitions for our children. And that necessarily isn't something that the state can mandate. So, guys, that was our discussion on equality and all the buzzwords, and I hope you found it interesting. And if you have any comments on it, good, bad, or indifferent, we'd like to hear from you. You'll find us on Twitter, the hashtag Unsafe Space. This has been Keith Redmond,
Sarah Ryan,
and we'll see you next week.